This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 148. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to Tokyo, Japan. Learn some of the history, the culture, the food, and some budget tips for this fascinating destination. Today on the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before I get into today's story, today's interview, I do have three different news articles for you that I want to call your attention to. One is, for those of you who read the blogging that I do on travel, you may have noticed an article I did a while back on yourtravelbiz.com or YTB, which is an online travel agency that lets you set up your own agency. And I did a financial analysis of that company and found it to be somewhat wanting, more of a pyramid scheme, and apparently the California Attorney General agrees, as they have just filed suit, that it is, quote, a gigantic pyramid scheme. So you might want to check out both that story as well as my analysis. The other two very sad and tragic news stories that we haven't mentioned on the show that happened since the last time I talked about travel. One was this gruesome and horrible murder that happened on Greyhound that you may have heard, where someone who was on a trip from Alberta to Winnipeg, one of the passengers apparently was beheaded and partially eaten, which is just bizarre. In a strange piece of irony, Greyhound had just launched an ad campaign with the line, "There's a reason you've never heard of bus rage." They have, for no surprise, pulled that ad campaign. And then in another piece of sad news, you probably heard the news that an American tourist, a 62-year-old man, was killed in Beijing, stabbed during the Olympics. Turns out that Todd Bachman, the father-in-law of the U.S. men's volleyball coach, was actually a man that my father knew and has known him for many years, had known him for many years, and was a wonderful man in his estimation. So, very sad news. The odd thing, and the reason why I point this out, though, is that the Chinese are having a hard time dealing with this story, and it just strikes them as bizarre. And so there are many, many conspiracy theories that have arisen around why someone would do this, that it's a separatist, that it was someone who knew the tour guide, that it was an enemy of the Communist Party. I'll put a link to all these bizarre conspiracy theories, as well as several other travel articles, in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. This show is again sponsored by Budget Rental Car, and you can save $30 off your next weekly car rental or 10% off any rental by going to budget.com/travel. You can find other ways to save money and help the show out by going to amateurtraveler.com/save. I'd like to welcome to the show Honor. Honor is the self-proclaimed UK Tokyoite and has come to talk to us about Tokyo. Welcome to the show, first of all.
Hello, Chris.
And you're going to have to explain UK Tokyoite. That's a mouthful.
Sure. Well, actually, I was born in the UK, lived there till I was 29, and I made the decision to move to Tokyo in 2001. since then, I've been living here apart from 1 year out in Singapore. And the reason for UK Tokyoite? Well, Tokyoite is the expression for somebody who lives in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. I guess I consider it to be my home now. So I'm the UK Tokyoite. And I love it here.
And one of the reasons that we wanted to have Honor on the show is that she does love it there and finds that a lot of travelers are intimidated by Tokyo. So what we'd like to do with this is give us some idea, Honor, why should people think about going to Tokyo? What are they afraid of, first of all, and why should they go?
Sure. I think there's a couple of things that really jump out when people talk about it. And one is language. There's mm-hmm. a big worry that I don't speak any Japanese. Am I going to be able to cope with it? Can I get around? Are people going to look at me as though I'm some strange person from outer space? That's kind of one of the big things that comes over. And I think particularly with Tokyo, language becomes far less of an issue because, all right, you may not be able to have long conversations with people in mm-hmm. English that you run into, but in terms of getting around, if you want to stay at a hotel, you can find plenty of hotels where they speak English. For a tourist, it's not so difficult once you find those access points to English. As well, in terms of travel, most signs now, they're in English. They're also actually in Korean. And of course,
oh, really?
Japanese
okay.
has the Chinese characters.
Mm-hmm,
so
sure.
it's Chinese as well.
Okay.
That's the first point. The biggest comment is it's a concrete jungle, isn't it? It's
uh-huh.
like, well, no, it's not. It's way more than that. Please come, find out. It's a funny place because Tokyo was basically destroyed twice in the last century. Once
mm-hmm, sure.
the great Kanto earthquake, and then, of course, after World War II, the whole place was basically rebuilt. So it's not historical in that sense, but there's an awful lot of tradition still here. And if you think of it as just being like this big, concrete, modern city, it misses the point. That there's so much more to it here. It's a mix of old and new and traditional and high-tech and
okay.
there's something for everyone.
Let's start getting into the specifics then. If I was to come to visit you for, say, a week or 2 weeks, where would you take me? What should somebody see in Tokyo?
You do need to see some of the history. And one of the places that is still here, it's still standing, is the Imperial Palace.
Mm-hmm.
And of all the generic places that I would take you, that would be the one.
Generic meaning that it's the place that tourists usually go.
Yes, okay. it's in the mm-hmm. guidebooks. This is one of the things you will be told to go and see.
Okay.
And I would still recommend this one because it's slap bang in the middle of the city. So you're surrounded by these skyscrapers, but it's like a mini oasis, if you like, in the middle of the city. It's got gardens surrounding it, Japanese gardens. So you get a feel for that kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
The palace itself is very old, traditional style Japanese architecture. It is step back in time. You look out from the garden to these skyscrapers, and yet you're in this place where you can feel some touch with the past.
Okay.
There's still some remnants of the old castle that used to be there and the gate that the shoguns used to come through. And those elements are still there.
The shogun, the military leader of Japan.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's nice in that respect. The next place I would take you, it's a totally different thing, but I would take you to Akihabara. It's well known anyway for the electronic gadgets that mm-hmm. are there, but it's also, more recently, it's become known as the Otaku City. Literally translated, Otaku is the closest we get in English is to say someone's a nerd or a geek.
Okay, all right.
That's the closest we can get in English, but it's
now,
not
you'd say
a,
you take everybody there, not just me, right?
No, not just you, Chris. Everybody. It's
okay.
a great place to go.
I didn't know what we were trying to imply here, but
it's a subculture of Tokyo,
mm-hmm,
basically.
Sure.
And otaku is anime and manga and all these things
okay.
have come from and are still generated in this one particular area of Tokyo. So you get there and you see these huge shops and they've got massive pictures of the anime characters and magazines, and it's a very unique place. Add to that, this is something that cracks me up. They have what's called a maid cafe,
okay.
or more recently, a butler cafe. if you are a gentleman and you fancy being treated as a gentleman for the day, then you should go to a maid cafe. And basically, when you go in, you'll be welcomed with good day, how are you? And you'll be ushered to a seat. And basically, you're treated like a king.
Okay.
If you're a lady, you go to the butler cafe and you have exactly the same experience, but from a gentleman. And it's just a crazy thing to do.
Huh.
If you fancy getting into touch with some of the otaku culture, that's something that you can have a go at.
Is that something that's popular with the Japanese then also? That's not just
Absolutely.
A tourist thing. Okay.
If you go to Akihabara, as you walk out of the exit, and it's actually signposted in English for Electric Town, mm-hmm. One of the first things you'll see as you come out, there's lots of girls dressed in maid uniforms, and they have like little flyers, and you'll see loads of Japanese. Everybody goes. It's part of Akihabara now.
Okay.
And definitely something that should be done if you're heading that way. The other thing, and it's still after, 7 years here, I still get a buzz when I do this, is to go to Shibuya. Shibuya, it's the funky end of town, and as I'm getting older, I do feel that now when I get there. You know, I don't quite belong there anymore. But there's an exit called Hachiko. If you do nothing else when you go to Shibuya, what you need to aim to do is arrive after dark, look for the English signs for the Hachiko exit, and as you come out of there, just stop and take stock of what's going on around you. Right in front of you, you will see the Hachiko Crossing. It's famous. It was featured on Lost in Translation.
Okay.
It gets pictured for everything, but there's a reason why. It's crazy, crazy busy. And for someone, for the first time, I remember just standing there thinking, how on earth am I going to cross this road? It's mayhem. And there's people coming from all different directions. Basically, all the traffic stops at once and everybody walks at once.
Oh,
so you're all going
okay.
at diagonals across each other. It's insane. Add to that, like all around you, you've got these big neon boards, and they're not just flashing out pictures, they're flashing out sound. So,
oh, interesting. Okay.
You've got all this movement, all this noise going on, and it's an overwhelming moment in a sense.
So, I'm picturing a loud Piccadilly Circus or Times Square.
Yeah,
okay.
Times 10.
Okay.
Those would be my top three things.
Okay.
The other thing I would say is get in touch with some more local Tokyo. You see all the regular places in the guidebook, but they never mention some of the lesser well-known places. And if you really want to get in touch with Japanese culture or kind of the way people live, then you want to get outside of those mainstream areas. So, for example, the whole area where I live is very close to the center of Tokyo, but it's got a completely different feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's local Tokyo. So if you stick to mainstream Tokyo, Shinjuku, Ginza, all the big major shopping centers, mm-hmm. you're going to see the same things everywhere you go. But if you go to some of the smaller shopping streets, that's where you get to see what I'd call the real shopping taking place and people buying their daily groceries.
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
if you want to pick up some real Japanese souvenirs that aren't going to cost you the earth, that's where you want to go.
Okay.
My recommendation would be a little place called Masashikoyama. It's on the Meguro line. It's two stops from Meguro on the Yamanote line, which loops around Tokyo. I guess Yamanote line is the most famous train line. It's a bit like the Circle line in London.
Okay.
Same principle. Meguro is to the south end of that, and two stations from that on the Tokyo Meguro line is a little station called Masashikoyama. There is no guidebook for it. Just get off and go and have a wander. And there's a big enclosed mall. But it's not a mall in the modern sense. It's a Japanese mall. And you go down there and there's lots of little shops like futon shop and tatami shop and all different kinds.
Okay.
And that's worth seeing.
Now, when we talked about people being intimidated by Tokyo, the one thing we didn't talk about is the subway system. Because I think a lot of Americans have seen that picture of, you know where I'm going here.
I do know where you're going.
Of rush hour and people hired to push people into the train.
Yeah.
So, first of all, really happens?
Yeah, it definitely happens. Okay. I mean, going to work in the morning, to be honest, I usually try and get in the office a little bit earlier just because I don't want to deal with it. The biggest thing I would say to you is if you can, avoid those rush hour times, which are basically in the morning, 7:30 till 9 in the morning. And in the evening, from about 5:30 through till 7 in the evening.
Okay.
If you do have to travel at those times, the worst line of all is the Yamanote line. Like I say, it loops and it takes in all the major stations. You've heard of the guys with the white gloves, right?
Right, who basically push people in the train until they can get in as many as they can.
Absolutely, and yes, that does happen. Seriously, if it does happen, don't take it personally. That's their job.
Now, as a woman traveling alone, any special, you know, other than just avoiding those things, it's just something you deal with is less personal space?
The biggest thing I would say, and something that people find intimidating, is even if it's not rush hour, the trains do get busy. If you're waiting for the train and it pulls up and the doors open and you're looking at this mass of people, and how do you get on? Well, honestly, just turn around and back on. Don't face people.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right.
It's the way you move on. Everything in Japan in that sense, it's a very respectful, polite culture.
Okay.
So to make eye contact to do that doesn't match. So just turn around and back on, and that's acceptable. That's fine. And that's that. I mean, you'll see lots of people doing that. If you just stop and watch, and then you'll feel comfortable with it. The other thing for women, and definitely before I came here, I'd heard stories about, hate to say it, but if you're a single woman, sometimes women get touched on the trains.
Right. That's certainly the fear. Okay.
Yeah. You will still hear stories of it. I'm not going to deny it happens. It does happen. But far, far less these days than it used to. Yeah. And it's something that's very, very actively being cracked down on. There are now all-female carriages as well. So
I'd heard
at these
that.
Rush
okay.
hour times, mm-hmm. if you do need to travel 7:30 till 9 in the morning or 5:30 till about 7 in the evening, usually when you stand on a train platform, each door is marked. There's a symbol on the floor that shows you where each door is. And the women's carriages are marked with a pink symbol. You'll know which one it is because it's got a pink symbol. So if you just wait there, you're guaranteed to be in an all-female carriage during those rush hours. It's not available on all train lines. It's only on certain train lines.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, I've never had a problem.
Okay.
Myself, I think it's actually more likely to be, and I hate to say this, it's more likely to be Japanese women that get picked on rather than Western-looking women. Because we are perceived to be more threatening by Japanese men. It's less likely to happen to you.
Okay.
I'm not saying it doesn't, but...
Interesting. We talked about what the guidebooks recommend and the Imperial Palace being, for instance, something that you would also recommend. What do they recommend that you think, no, you wouldn't spend your time doing that if you only had a week or 2 weeks in Tokyo?
For me, Ginza's probably top of that list. Ginza, it's true, is one of the oldest districts. It's one of the richest. Yes, there's some great shopping there. I mean, if you're into shopping, then... yeah, maybe you do want to go.
Okay.
But if you want to see some aspects of Tokyo that are a little different and not just your standard, I'm going to go shopping, I'm going to go to the designer shops, blah, 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 then I would avoid Ginza because, I mean, I can do that anywhere. I can do it in Singapore, I can do it in London.
Sure.
What's the point coming to Tokyo to do that? In my opinion, along the same lines, you'll see stuff written about. There's a place called Roppongi Hills, and then there's Midtown. These are big, they're almost mini cities where you have some of the major offices, like Fortune 500 companies. Then you will have some shops, you have some apartments. You usually have a big hotel built into all that. They're very nice. I'm not saying they're not, but again, to me, if you've only got 2 weeks to be in Tokyo, I wouldn't recommend it. Unless you are, I mean, if you're a shopaholic and that's your thing, that's different.
Tokyo has the reputation of an expensive city. Any advice for where to stay or where to eat or...
It's true, it can be an expensive city, but there's an awful lot of options here. So if we start with food, the local tradition is a type of place called an izakaya. An izakaya is an eating and drinking house, basically. Mm-hmm. It's the closest thing to a British pub.
Okay.
But it's not a British pub. That's the closest analogy I can make.
Okay.
But izakayas, they totally fulfill the expression cheap and cheerful. Again, if you really want to see Japanese people letting their hair down, an izakaya is the place to go. There's an awful lot of business done here. So after work, this is where a group of business guys or business women, or this is where they'll go to chat, to build relationships. It's a real, real life experience as well.
Okay.
It's you walk into an izakaya and it's full of just chatter and laughter and people socializing. In terms of cost, I mean, an average night out in an izakaya for us, and I have to say we're not the lightest drinkers in the world.
Okay.
We usually spend between 3,000 to 4,000 yen per head, which I guess in British money, that works out to what, £40?
Okay, so that'd
and that's
be about
a big
$80
night out.
Then.
I mean, yeah, okay. That means we're out from about, I don't know, 7 p.m. and we won't leave till maybe 11, 11:30.
Okay.
I don't think that's too expensive by
Tokyo.
So that's
dinner and three drinks or something along those lines?
Yeah, food and drink.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great atmosphere. It's cheap, but you also get a touch of kind of how the locals are enjoying themselves. Other things food-wise, you'll see like around the train stations, lots of small kind of stand-up food places or almost like a stall. It'll be a long room with maybe a counter and tall bar stools. They look like bar stools.
Okay.
Those places are great to get cheap, quick and easy food. It's usually food like noodles, ramen, this kind of dish, and you're probably looking at about 500 to 800 yen for a big bowl of food that's good. If you're worried about ordering food in those kind of places, you will usually see either outside the doorway or right inside the doorway, they have what looks like a vending machine, and each button on it has pictures. So you can see what each different food is. So even if you don't understand, I mean, it will be in Japanese writing, so it'll be kanji. But don't worry if you don't understand that, because all you need to do is look at the pictures, if you don't mind doing that. And then, you know, oh yeah, I'll fancy this one. And just, you press the button, you put in your money, and it gives you a ticket, and you just take the ticket to the counter.
Okay.
And that's it.
And you said 500 yen, and I think the exchange rate to the dollar right now is about a penny to a yen, so that's about $5. Okay.
And then, of course, with that, you automatically get, it's usually oolong tea or green tea or something is served with that. And then hotels, actually, hotels are a great experience here. I mean, your budget is up to you, but there's different things you can try. I mean, if you really don't want to spend a lot of money, there's the capsule hotel option.
Right.
I mean, it's a little bit like going into a box, but it is an option for you if you don't want to spend much money.
And my understanding is that tends to be used more for not even so much the foreign backpacker, but the Japanese businessman who is sleeping off the night before or something.
Yes, or he's had a late business meeting and he's missed the last train home and he doesn't want to pay for a taxi.
Okay.
The other thing I would say about that is for women, it's harder. A lot of capsule hotels are men only.
Okay.
It's becoming more regular now, but basically I'd say for guys, no problem. If you want to try a capsule hotel, it doesn't matter where you are. For women, you may have a harder job. You might have to look around to find one that takes women as well.
So let's assume we were talking about people who want to do a little step up from there.
Yeah. The next thing I would say is, you've got a choice of two. There's what are called business hotels.
Okay.
So they're generally, as the name says, they're used by people away on business. But they're not fancy. You know, you've got your bed, you've got your, usually an ensuite bathroom.
Okay.
You've got cupboards for your stuff and a TV and maybe your kettle, that kind of stuff in the room. And that's going to cost you in Tokyo on average between 7,000 to 10,000 yen a night. You can pay more, but okay. This you can easily find 7,000 to 10,000 yen per night, particularly in areas like Shinjuku, again, or Shibuya. Those are two areas that are good for finding somewhere that's not too expensive.
Okay, so $70 to $100 a night, that's not too bad.
Yeah. The other option there is there's also a type of accommodation called a ryokan, which is a more traditional style Japanese accommodation. Usually older buildings, you usually don't sleep on a bed, you'll sleep on a futon, and they'll be put in the cupboard and you just roll them out in the evening onto, usually it's a tatami floor, so you'll just roll them out onto the floor. That's about
the
same kind.
So that's the rice mat floor.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's about the same kind of price as a business hotel.
Okay.
Actually, they're really nice places to stay. They're a little harder to find in Tokyo simply because of the nature of the city. If you move out of the city just a little bit, then no problem. But right in the center, a ryokan is more difficult to find.
And if we did go out of the city, let's just get to that. If you had one favorite side trip from Tokyo, what would it be?
Can I only choose one? Can I choose two?
Sure, choose two.
Okay. Number one would be Hakone. Hakone is about an hour and a half away from Tokyo on the trains. It's easy to navigate to. Basically, from Shinagawa, you can take the Shinkansen and change. Hakone is right by Mount Fuji.
Okay.
There's five lakes around there, and Hakone sits on one of those lakes. There's actually lots of activities you can do there. There's cable car, and the cable car takes you across the top of one of the volcanic areas. So as you're going over, you can smell it. You can't help but smell that sulfur, and it's like looking at something out of a sci-fi film, and all these little bubbling holes in the ground, and the steam coming out, and the yellow stains. I know it doesn't sound particularly attractive, but it's something I've never seen before in my life. And then with all this modern sci-fi view in the background, you've then got Mount Fuji. I always refer to her as a she for some reason, I don't know, but to me, she's beautiful. She really is something that's just breathtaking. If you take the cable car, there are various stations you can get off along the way. One of the stations, if you come off, you can actually buy some eggs that are boiled in the volcanic water. It's kind of one of the things that you know, again, you'll find all the Japanese going to do this as well. Everybody piles off and you can go walking up this area. The one thing they do say, if you have something like asthma, that's when you need to be a bit careful because the fumes are pretty strong. They're very clear about that. Like, if you have any breathing issues, leave. Don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you're okay, I mean, I've done it, no problem. It did make me feel a bit sick at one point. The smell was quite overpowering, but it was a great thing to do. I'd recommend that to anybody.
Okay.
And if you've got kids at the same place, like I say, it's Lake Asano, they have these big pirate ships, which is kind of bizarre in the middle of, you know, this beautiful countryside, but they are pirate ships, and they actually have like pirates crafted onto the masts and the rigging, wooden pirates like statues. So kids love it because they can have their pictures taken with the pirates, and then the boat goes across the lake and you can see the views of Fuji. And then also there's a torii, the red gate that's standing in the water. And these are traditional places where if you walk through, you cleanse yourself. It's getting rid of evil spirits and all these things. So it's a very traditional area of Japan. And that's a great place to stay in a ryokan that has an onsen.
Okay.
Onsen is a must if you possibly can. Onsen is the hot spring.
Okay.
And of course, because Hakone is a volcanic region, there are many ryokans with onsen in this area. Most of the ones in Hakone are separate. So if you go there, if you're female, you go to your onsen and the guys go to your onsen.
Okay.
And that's what I'd recommend if you're Western. Because it's strange anyway, because you don't wear bathing costumes. If you go into an onsen, you go in naked.
Okay.
And you must wash before you go in. You clean yourself before you get into the bath.
And it's a communal bath, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And usually there's maybe four or five, bath. So usually outside as well. You're not inside, you're outside, but it will be fenced off. It's totally enclosed.
Okay.
No one can see in, but there'll be different baths with different minerals or elements in the water.
Okay.
So, for example, if you suffer from arthritis or rheumatism, there are specific onsens that are supposed to, I mean, I don't know how true it is, but the minerals in there are supposed to help with whatever is wrong. But it's a great experience just in itself. In fact, there's one very famous onsen in Hakone, which has about 40 different baths. There's a green tea bath. And in that one, you are actually allowed to go, I believe, with costume because it's for kids to go. Everybody mixes together for that one because it's kind of an adventure onsen, if you like.
And then you had a second side trip.
Yeah, my second side trip would be to a place called, well, it's Yokohama, but the actual location is Sakuragicho. It's only a half-hour ride on the Toyoko line. You catch that from Shibuya Station, again on the Yamanote line. It's a half-hour train ride from Tokyo. This is the port town. This is the major port city that where a lot of the kind of the Portuguese business was happening back in time. So Sakuragicho and Yokohama, it has more of a cosmopolitan feel to it, in a sense, than Tokyo. Even though Tokyo is like the big business capital, Sakuragicho is, it's more chilled out and laid back. And there's a place called the Landscape Tower there. It used to have the fastest lift in the world. I don't think it is anymore. But you go up to the 59th floor, I think. I can't remember which floor it is. But basically, it takes you about 3 seconds to get up there. And you get some great views out over the bay. You can actually look down right over where the Shinkansen's come in. So there's some great views from up there. And just to walk round, it's a place with a little bit more space. If you want to get away from it a little bit, but still be in a city environment, that's the place I would go. And I really enjoy going down there.
As we start to wind this down, the biggest surprise you found moving to Japan, moving to Tokyo?
The closeness of all the buildings.
Okay.
And the crowds.
Okay.
Until I got used to it.
Let's see, Japan has the population of half the United States in the area of California. So that's about five times the density of people that we have here. And there's a lot of people in this state. So, yeah, I can imagine. Interesting.
Yeah.
One warning you would give.
Medicine.
Okay.
If you have any specific medication that you regularly take, make sure you bring enough with you so that if anything goes wrong, or maybe you need to stay a couple of extra days or something, you have enough to get you through that period of time. Because even basic meds like paracetamol, I can't buy that here. You can get Bufferin here, and I think you can now get Tylenol, but any special medications, you're going to have trouble because the licensing laws are different here.
The only two things I would add to that, and I don't know if we've talked about them on the show, is one, never pack prescription medication in your checked bag.
Absolutely.
Always take that in your carry-on. And two is, always know the generic for anything you may be taking, not the brand name. And that's if you go overseas anywhere. That isn't just something for Japan to know.
Yeah, I very much agree with that.
What do you wish you had known before you went to Japan?
More of the language.
Okay.
Honestly,
sure.
I wish I'd taken more time just to learn some basic phrases. I came in a bit of a whirlwind. Various things happened in my life, so I made the decision and I came. I wish I'd taken just a couple of weeks just to learn very, very simple. Sumimasen is an expression which will achieve so many things here. Sumimasen says I'm sorry, it says excuse me, it calls for help, it serves many different purposes.
Okay.
The other one I would say is daijoubu, and I used to remember it by the expression deja vu, so daijoubu, and it means that's okay, no problem, no worries.
Okay.
It's that kind of expression. So I wish I'd just learned, not much, but it gets you so much further here. If you can just speak some very basic, just a couple of words, they'll love it.
Okay.
And they'll love you for it.
The best day you've had in Tokyo?
That is a very good question. Actually, I think that would have to be... Oh, I'm dicing between two.
Oh, tell us both.
Okay. One would be the...
It's already going to be a long show at this point.
Sorry.
The people who can't do a long show, they've already stopped listening, so okay. That's not a problem.
One would be the Sumo Festival. If you're in Tokyo during the Sumo Festival, definitely go. It's just so different to any other sport, like what I envision as a sport. To anything else I've experienced. And it's a ceremony, it's a show, and it's a sport all in one. And just soak it up, basically. The other one I would say is, the one recommendation if I can make is, when you're planning to come to Tokyo or anywhere in Japan, check out the annual calendar and look for festivals or national holidays. Because if you're here during any of those, that's what you should go and see. Above anything else, go to a festival or find out what's happening on a national holiday, because there's always special events. For me, the two big ones is Hanabi in August, which is massive fireworks. It's now. Every Friday, every Saturday night, there are huge fireworks, like nothing I've ever seen before in my life. Like, they last for an hour and a half, and they're usually by riversides, so Tamagawa River or Sumida River in Tokyo. There's always something going on. Just, you have to see it. I've never seen anything like it in my life. The other festival would be in Asakusa, right in the center of the city, in June. It's the really big Matsuri. You know the omakoshis? You see them carrying it on their shoulders. When they're dressed in festival clothes, there's usually a bunch of guys and they're carrying this. It's the size of a coffin, but it's not a coffin. You carry two poles and there's a big box on top and it's basically a shrine.
Okay.
And it's a portable shrine that gets carried through the streets. Just a day of madness. Japanese people drinking on the streets, having a ball of a time, and it's just a big celebration. And each local area has its own Matsuri. But the Asakusa one is the biggest. There's about 3 million people turn out for that day.
Okay. The most memorable person you've met?
Most memorable person I've met? I guess I'd go back to when I first came to Japan, because those are the memories that stick. And it was actually a young student. It was one of my first times to go to Japanese karaoke. He was just mad. He was so into his karaoke. And you go into this booth, everybody takes their turn at singing. It's fun, it's great fun anyway. But this guy was literally bouncing around the room. I have a picture of him in midair. And he had bright orange hair, and he was the typical young Japanese man, you know, before he becomes a salaryman, before he gets tied down. And he was just bouncing off the walls. I'll never forget him. He was great.
And as we wrap this up, the hardest challenge of all, if you had to summarize Tokyo in three words, what three words would you use?
Adventure, high-tech, traditional.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And if they're interested in knowing more about Tokyo, including at least one tip that Honor had for me that we edited out to keep this work safe, where should they go to learn more about your experiences and your adventures in Tokyo?
Sure. I've actually put together a website specifically for that purpose. I want people who come or are thinking of coming to Tokyo to be able to kind of find things a little bit more easily and hopefully find it from someone who's here that can help out. So my website is tokyotopia.com. That's www.tokyotopia.com. And there's also a contact us form on there. So if you've got any questions at all, please feel free to drop
what's the question that I edited out of the show?
Exactly. The question that was edited out was that, is there anything remember to bring to Tokyo? And if you want to know the answer to that, just email at me and I'll send you. All right.
Honor, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us about your adopted home there in Tokyo.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate it.
This show has gone a little longer than normal, so we will be skipping both the internet resource section as well as the community news section. The other thing is, you may be able to tell, is I've got Nicole by the time I'm recording this, so I need to just finish up this show and take a nap. If you have any questions and would like to contact me, just send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on the website, amateurtraveler.com. As always, thanks so much for listening. One more cathedral.